Hi, Debbie.
So, hello, Jack. How are you?
I'm good, Debbie. How are you?
I am so happy to be speaking with you again. It's been so long since we last chatted for, it was either Ben-Hur or Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what a treat to speak to you again. For so many years.
Jack, the treat is for me. I have to tell you, your grandfather right now would be so proud, and wherever his spirit is now is looking down and smiling. You have been wasting your time in front of the camera, my friend. You belong behind the camera as a director and writer. This.
Oh, you're just so sweet. Oh, my goodness.
Jack, this film is amazing. On every level. Your work with Peter Simonite on the cinematography, Joe's editing, Ben's scoring. And this all just buttresses the beauty of the performances. But at the core, you have this great story. It's a character study. A character study of a man who happens to be a boxer. And it's really interesting. And I also love you picked a boxer because that's a nod to your grandfather, because I know he boxed in his youth and was he was a champion. So that touched me right away. Knowing that going in.
Oh, that's the point.
You craft this so beautifully, putting us into the black and white and shades of gray world. So choosing monochromatic black and white with Peter was brilliant. Brilliant choice on your part. Because you can really play with those shades of gray. And that's what we get in Mikey. Shades of gray of his life. But you set the tone so quickly that we know he's a great guy the minute we see him with his cat. And then giving the...
Oh, it's lovely you pick up on that. That's so true.
And giving the little girl his coat. Cinema fans who might go into this thinking, okay, it's a boxing movie. You have touchstones like that that they'll recognize from the character of Rocky Balboa. Because Stallone did something very similar in giving Rocky a heart. You give Mikey a heart here with those little touches. Breaking this all down, where did this start for you? Because this, on every level, is just, I am blown away by it, Jack.
Oh, Deborah, I'm so touched by your comments. I mean, that means so much to me. And it's amazing how much you've picked up on. It's funny. I think the seed was planted from my work with Michael back doing Boardwalk, where I used to watch him punch a sandbag and go off to the boxing gym most days, and also just being opposite him and seeing him what hard on the exterior, but he has these eyes and this depth into his soul, which is so sensitive and so vulnerable and childlike in spirit. Mm-hmm. And there's innocence to Michael, which I always felt like I wanted to capture in some way. And when I came up with the idea for the movie, it's funny, you know, those moments where you can't imagine anybody else but Michael in this role.
Yeah.
I wanted to make something exactly what you just said, which isn't a boxing film. It's a film about a boxer, about a character. It's about the human condition, about those relationships, making something relatable. And it's funny that you brought up, the cat and the girl. I said, you know, you can always tell a good person if animals and children like them.
That's it.
They're dear to him. They instantly are drawn to him, both. And I wanted that from the beginning. Even the way he writes dear Sasha in the beginning, he misspells dear. It's like he's a child himself.
Mm-hmm.
And like kids, it's, he's done some bad things, but he's not a bad person. And I think the world right now is so polarizing in that aspect. You know, it's just, there's always, you know, between, you know, there's so much hate and there's not enough love and coming together. And I wanted to really tell a story about somebody who had done some, you know, had made some wrong steps in their life, but that didn't mean they're a bad person. person and the people that really matter are far more willing to forgive than you might expect. And it's about, what if you only had one day? If you had one day, what would you say? Who would you say it to? And who would? What would you do? I really wanted to play on that. And I wanted to make something that's just full of heart. Like something, and follow a character that you can actually fall in love with.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're missing that in cinema right now a lot. I think we're missing those great old films, the films from the past that made me fall in love with cinema, made me want to make movies, were because we watch and witness something unfold in front of us where we fully, fully invested into a character. But by the end of it, you are taken on a journey and you do witness, you know, all the ups and downs, all the lights and shades. And like you said, that's what black and white does for me. I think it's a magnifying glass to the soul. I think it is playing on that. So, you know, I was trying to include everything that you said was right.
I mean, Jack, it's just this personal journey that we go on, self-acceptance, redemption, and it's rooted in kindness and great sensitivity. And it's not just what Michael brings to the character of Mikey with sensitivity, but we get John Magaro's work as Father Patrick. And I have to say, that scene in the church, as Mikey is leaving, and then you and Joe Klotz, you hold that shot for an extra beat. That is,
when he leaves,
yes, and he turns.
Oh my God! And John's sitting there, and he doesn't know that Mikey's looking at him.
Yeah, just.
Oh my God!
I got chills.
Breaks my heart.
I got chills with that. You have characters like Father Patrick, Steve Buscemi as Mikey's uncle, Joe Pesci as Pops, and of course Ron Perlman is just beyond reproach here. And really, it just gives so much. He is the father that Mikey longed for.
Yeah, the one who actually felt the love from, you know.
But as we watch the film play out and get into that third act, the love from Mikey's father really was there. He just couldn't articulate it.
He couldn't say it. And we actually added it. So it's amazing you said it, because you know, that song is Joe singing, that what we put on, that's one of Joe's songs, and that's actually Joe singing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's why it's so amazing, is actually Joe's has one of the most beautiful voices. And I wanted exactly that, which is when my grandmother was suffering from early onset dementia, she would hear music and it would pull her back in the room for a second. She had these moments of lucidity based on, like, the music would almost pull back memories. And, you know, that moment with Joe, and he says that line, which is, you know, as a kid, I used to pretend you wrote this song for me, which was all I wanted. What he's saying is all I wanted, you know, because the song is If I Ever Lost You, all I wanted to hear was I love you, and his dad was never able to say it, but I say there's this one moment when he leaves the room and you just see Joe's face, and it's just on the brink, and you realize he remembered everything. He remembered everything.
That's another incredibly powerful shot that you've got. But now you brought up the singing. Well, I'm gonna bypass cinematography for a moment, jump into the score and your needle drops. Ben's score and the instrumentation with a lot of strings, violin, some viola and cello.
Yeah.
When we get into the second and third act, as well as piano, it really articulates and exemplifies the beauty of isolation and the internalization that Mikey is going through, set against the brutality of the sport of boxing and the sport of life. It knocks you down and you got to get back up. And that juxtaposition there is so exquisite, Jack. And then your choice of needle drops. What were you looking for musically with Day of the Fight?
Well, it's funny because Sir Ben McDermott is my brother-in-law. It's my sister's husband, and he's a beautiful musician. And they live in Norfolk in England in the countryside. So he's never scored a film, but he has a poet, the soul of a poet. And I So I sent him the film, and I always had him in my head, even with the tenor score, very much a quartet. So a lot of strings, obviously piano at moments, but those strings are very evocative, yeah. I think, of the human soul. Mm-hmm. And I think they can soar, and they can also, you know, they can be so intimate, and at the same time, they can be so grand. And it's almost like the spirit, those ups and downs that I really wanted to play with during, you know, I write to music, so every single needle drop was in the move, in the script, and as well as me writing two bits of score, because I know just how important music is. Mm-hmm. Because I find that actually acting is very like music, in essence, that you know when you're hitting a false note. It's when you're working with somebody and you're watching a performance, or you're watching two actors or three, whatever it is, together. It's very like listening to music, a bit like, you know, I don't want to say jazz because it's sort of used too liberally, but there is something that you can hear those false notes. You can see those false notes. Everybody, when you're in harmony, I think it's very, very musical, in essence. So, you know, it needed to sort of convey, the music itself needed to convey what Mikey's journey is and the internal struggle that he's working with and against, in essence. The music was so important in this.
And it really comes through. Ben did an amazing job. And then to punctuate it with the jazz beats with the saxophone player in the subway and your needle drops, which are so beautifully placed as well. And this is also where your sound design comes into play, and how you don't have constant score. It ebbs and flows, just like the music, just like Mikey's day. But your sound then in that third act, when we have the post-fight buzzing and it gets loud, and it gets really loud, and then it drops down, that speaks volumes, the way that that is constructed there and the mix that's done between score, dialogue, and sound. Really beautiful, Jack.
Thank you so much. We had wonderful Lou Goldstein, who was that, and Joe Klotz, our editor, because you just realize how much you play with this stuff in post. And the slightest thing that feels too much or too little, it's such a dance, the entire process, specific impos. And I actually find it so revealing. It's so beautiful because you can find so many moments and almost, you know, emphasize them through score, through sound, through certain bits of design, of how we're pulling things up or pushing, you know, sorry, pushing things up, pulling things back at different moments. So it's very nice for you to mention that. It really does mean a lot.
Bringing up Joe, because the editing goes hand in hand, the visual editing goes hand in hand with that as well. The editing is just exemplary, Jack. And most notably, that third act and those final sequences as Mikey is, he's back at his apartment, he's walking through, and you have the superimpositions in almost a triptych fashion. Absolutely gorgeous. And I started bawling. I started crying when I saw that.
Oh, I'm so, well, it's meant to do, and that sort of metaphor for the movie, like, he's living in purgatory. He's living in black and white, you know. It's he's trying to paint color to these memories. And at the very end, what's happening all around him are these projections, quite literal projections of the future. Not necessarily things that have happened, but of wishes that he wishes are going to happen. So they are quite literal, in color projections of the future, because he's gone through that. I always say that sort of elegy of walking through life, the journey, purgatory, to cross the River Styx, is in the taxi ride with his father appearing to him. And then that final moment where, when we got his eyes, I said, you know, when you close your eyes, just before you close your eyes, not that we can see it, but I want you to smile. And he smiled, and that's what made the pupil dilate at the last second before he closed his eyes. He smiled. It's almost like the completion of that journey, which, yeah, very poetic in essence.
And that's so beautiful. And a lot of people don't realize that, that you don't have to see somebody smile to know that they're smiling, because when they smile, it changes their eyes, and you can see the smile in their eyes.
Yes, yeah. It's amazing that it works so well. Well, we made the movie in 20 days, so we didn't have much time to do anything. So we would, you know, it was so great to have just so many brilliant collaborators. You know, Michael being the absolute anchor in front of the camera. But it is, you know, when you only have a couple of takes because you don't have time to do anything else, God, it's refreshing to have be so on the same page with all of those amazing HOD, everybody around you, all working together, understanding the film we were doing. Like, understanding what the heartbeat of the movie was. That's why those moments work so well, I believe.
That's absolutely... That is so true. Now I'm getting a message. I can only give you one more question. They're going to cut us off.
Okay, go ahead.
So I have to talk to you about Peter Simonite, your cinematography, and the two of you designing your visual grammar. Absolutely stunning. Your use of slow pans. ECUs are focused on very small things, hands or piece of paper. The boxing trunks, the silks when he gets them out of the drawer. Otherwise, you keep things a little bit wider in, you know, a mid-shot, but a closer mid-shot. And your fight sequences that are shot are just stunning, stunning. And I love what you did with the fight choreography with, it's the Rocky Balboa Apollo Creed. Both are on the ground. Is anybody getting up? And of course, the fake out with that Ron Perlman pulls off so beautifully with, instead of punching as a southpaw, we go to right, or we go from right, and then we suddenly become a southpaw. But Peter's lensing and lighting is supreme. Talk to me about how the two of you developed this visual grammar.
Well, I wrote it for it to be in black and white because I always found the films, like from my past, the films that really moved me, that made me want to be a filmmaker. I wanted this to almost have a little homage to those films that we're not seeing much anymore, which are films about feeling, about character. Peter, I found an instantly just like it was simpatico from day one. We totally understood the tone of the film. I wanted to get, I find black and white to be, in, like I always say, like a magnifying glass to the soul. And I wanted, you know, we used these beautiful 30, you know, the Alexa 35s, but we had these Leica lenses that gave it much more depth than a lot of, which I find quite flat, a lot of the black and white that's done digitally these days. That's almost why we, at one point, were discussing film. But when we did our camera test and we did the black and white with these Leica lenses, it gave us that grit, that grain. And we obviously had the brilliant Tim Stiphon doing the color correction at the end, all added to it. But, you know, we only had a day and a half with the fight, so there wasn't really any choreography. I pretty much, you know, Michael, who'd been training for a year, and we were, you know, fighting opposite Cameron, there were certain bits that were full contact, and they were going at it. I just had three cameras. I was saying, you can't ask me any questions. I know the beats. We have to hit this, 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 this. And that's the genius of Joe Klotz, and knowing that I had one of the great, sensitive, brilliant editors, that I knew I could build a brilliant fight in the room, but they just had to go along with the stages because choreography would have slowed us down.
Yeah.
And the entire film, to be honest, you know, we were jumping back and forth. A lot of the memories went up to 48 frames rather than the usual 24. Sometimes I'd skip between 32 to 48, but 48, because I always find memories, they don't have a beginning, they don't have an end, but there's a reason why they come to us. Mm-hmm. There is something specific. It could be a smell, it could be a moment, it could be a face, it could be a sound, but they are fleeting, and he's trying to paint these colors, so that's why we use that rather desaturated color in the memories. He's trying to paint this color to his memories. So it's a lot of it sort of plays into the metaphor of what the film was.
Jack, I don't know how you're ever going to top this film. You have to get behind the camera again. I want to see more from you as a director, a writer-director. Of course, I love seeing you.
I can't wait to do it again. This is absolute love. I mean, I loved every second of it.
This is your destiny, Jack. I just don't know how you're going to beat this. It is perfection.
That's amazing.
Perfection.
The highest praise ever. And coming to me, that means so much to me. Honestly, really means a lot.
And I will tell you, I've known Timur, and you worked with Timur. I've known him for so many years. I have never told him a film of his was perfection.
Oh, that's so good. My goodness. I feel like I should just stop the day now and go that's as good a compliment I've ever gotten. So you mean everything to me right now. It means so much. And we need it because this film is dying, you know, and we're not getting the chance to make films like this. So, you know, we need people to yell it from the rafters.
Well, I will be yelling this one from the rafters for you, Jack. Just absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. It means so much to me. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much.
I hope we get to do this again soon.
Oh, I hope so, too. I don't want to wait so long. I mean, you know.
Yeah, we won't wait so long next time, exactly.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Jack.
Bye, darling. Bye, Annie. Bye.